Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer. So let's bring her out. The star attraction. The one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. JUDYGOLD.
Please welcome the funniest lady in show business, Ms. JUDYGOLD.
Oh my God, I can't even fucking get on this thing.
And you should know it. Oh yeah, with each glance. All right. Anyway, Bette Sussman at the piano, ladies and gentlemen. Bette Sussman at the piano. Okay, you know I have my favorite guests on Kill Me Now. I am so fucking excited. Ladies and gentlemen, I am proud, humbled, and pleased to present the one, the only, BD Wong! BD Wong is here. BD Wong is here. BD Wong is here. BD. Thank you for, first of all, thank you for being here with your new hair. Your new hair.
My wig.
Fuck it, this fucking thing out of here.
Like my wig?
No, but it's so cool. It's so like, you could be like a cop in the 70s.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Right, yeah. Sure.
Have you ever played a cop?
It's here and there.
Okay. You better not give one word answers the whole fucking time or I'm going to have to kill you.
I'm warming up.
BD is it? I just want to say actor, writer, director, author, wow. Playwright, librettist, Tony winner, Emmy nominee. I mean, you're fucking everything.
I am.
You do everything. So, This is a podcast, so no one can hear, but when did you get the new hair? Like, the new hair?
Just 15 minutes ago. I conditioned it for you.
No, but it's been...
It's just been growing, but it doesn't usually look like this. Like, Anastasia, our friend, she saw it a few days ago or whatever. It doesn't look like this, but I got it all, like...
I fucking love it. It's really hot.
It has no part, you see? It's a secret.
But, you know, you are a little upset. Like, you have to deal with it all the time.
I don't like it, really. You know, really, it's because I have to grow it. And it just recently got past the awkward stage where the parts that used to be buzzed on the sides
right.
Grew out past the point where they don't look like they're just, like, sticking out. And so now it's kind of getting a life of its own.
I like it.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. I'm in the awkward stage.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway... BDA, you probably have never listened to my podcast.
I have, yeah.
You have?
Yeah. I forgot who it was, though. Who was it?
So, I like to, you know, talk about how people grew up because, you know, a lot of people don't talk about, you know, we want to learn about BD, also known as Bradley Darrell Wong.
Yeah.
So, you were...
Do you know any of it?
I know a lot of it.
You do?
San Francisco. Born and raised. You're a third generation Chinese American.
Yes, very good.
Your mother was a telephone company supervisor.
Yeah, great.
And your father was a postal worker.
Yes.
And you're the middle of three boys.
That's right. I was a Jan.
You're Jan.
Yeah.
Do you think you're Jan-ish?
I don't think I'm Jan-ish. I think my younger brother's more Jan-ish.
Really?
Yeah.
But what does he do?
But he should. He would never. I hope he's not listening because he wouldn't like it for me to
listening.
Say that.
What does he do?
He's a recently retired firefighter.
Wow, that's hot.
Yes, totally.
And what about your older brother?
My older brother is a semi-retired. A former physician, and he's a consultant.
Okay, boring.
Very interesting, though, actually.
It is?
He's a bedside manner consultant.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
He teaches doctors?
He teaches doctors and nurses how to get along and bedside manner and the ethics of healthcare and serving the people that need it.
Because it's
a really broken system. And so he goes in and he like does retreats and coaches staffs.
And does he teach them how to deal with patients too?
Yeah. He has a whole theories, and he wrote a book.
What's the name of it?
Heroes Need Not Apply.
Aww. Oh, I think I like him more. What's his name?
Yeah, Brian.
Brian, or are they all B's?
Yeah.
What's the third one?
Barry.
He should be the gay one, Barry, don't you think?
Yeah, probably. Bradley, though, I don't know.
Yeah, Bradley's pretty gay. Wow, so he's a doctor, so...
Yeah,
I mean, you did win a Tony, and, you know, you are a fucking movie star and TV star. Do you think your parents favor him because he's... Well, your father's gone, but do you think your mother favors him because he's a doctor?
Well, I think she favors us all in different ways, yeah.
Oh God, I'm so sick of you being perfect.
No, I think the doctor thing was really important to them, and my older brother was older and I was having trouble kind of figuring out what I wanted to do, and that put pressure on me.
Right.
But then he became a doctor, and that was great for them. They were very proud of him.
And then my thing let
the little bit of the air out of the tires for me, the stress of like,
right.
What the hell,
I
was going to be such a loser.
And then your other brother was like, fuck it, I'm fucking going to fight fires.
Save people's lives and
yes.
Shit like that. Yeah, that's right.
I love your
so
family.
Everybody has their own kind of thing.
Right. So, I mean, they're all individuals. Now, did you have your own room growing up?
No.
Who'd you share it with?
My brother, Barry.
The gay one.
Yeah. No, yeah.
I know.
The one that made me gay, yeah.
And so and so did Brian have his own room?
Yeah, and then Brian went to college, so then I guess we got our own rooms after that, yes.
So yeah. Brian had his own room, and that's why he was able to become a physician. Because he had space to study.
Oh, yeah. He was perfect, and still is very perfect. Like,
really? Is he married?
Yes.
And
he has two boys, yeah.
And what do they do?
One of them is a chef, and one of them is a a corporate real estate. It works for corporate real estate. For.
So as a young child.
Yeah.
What part of San Francisco did you grow up in?
The Sunset District by the beach.
Really? Yeah. Nice.
My parents lived with my brother, Brian, in North Beach near Chinatown. And then when we were born, we moved out to the avenues, it's called. And that's where I went to public high school. And that's where I grew up and everything.
And was it a suburb or was it more city-ish?
It was suburb-ish. It was
like if we're in New York, what would you say? It's Brooklyn-y? Shoot. Like Red Hooky?
It's kind of Queens-ish, I guess. I don't know.
It's Queens-ish.
It's that place that you see in the photographs near the beach where all the houses look exactly the same
and they're
very small.
Did you live in a house or an apartment?
In a house, yeah.
Wow.
A little house with a tiny little strip of lawn in front of each house. It was like a development.
Right. Where?
It was a development, but it wasn't fancy. It was very like starter homes kind of thing.
Right. Like, so you started taking voice lessons at a very young age, is that correct?
I sang in the choir, the chorus, it was called.
Me too. And can I say something?
No.
Okay. So if you love, I was in the chorus and the band, I was a fucking nerd. Anyway.
Yeah.
And so
at high school or in junior high school or in middle school or whatever you call it?
I was, in middle school too.
Yeah.
Like I started in like fourth grade. Anyway.
Yeah, fourth grade. That's
yes, that's when you have
school.
To, yeah. So by high school, when we would do choral concerts.
Yes.
And then it would be all the cunty sopranos, in the first row. And then altos in the second row. And then the baritone and bass, right? The tenor and bass, right?
Yeah.
And so there would be. The sopranos would stand on the stage, and then there was a riser, and then there was another riser.
But you didn't have to stand on the riser.
I didn't fucking stand on the riser, and I was still taller than everyone. It's the worst. It's in the fucking yearbook. It is so depressing.
But they can't see your feet.
No, I'm on the end, I'm taller than all the fucking girls who are on the fucking riser.
Wait a second. I was in elementary school, and I was the smallest person. This is seriously true.
Yes.
And I got put in the middle of the first row, and everyone went like this. It was like arrow pointing to my shortness. That's how I felt.
Aww. Okay.
But then I got solos and stuff.
Shut up.
Yeah.
But we graduated grammar school in size order, and I was the last one to graduate. Isn't that horrible?
Not if you were. It would be horrible.
Okay, I was 6 feet.
The biggest
one. Okay. Anyway, you had.
No, it was seriously terrible for you the whole time.
Horrible. It was awful.
Like you'd wake up and go, day of like being the tallest person. I'm sorry.
Getting called Bigfoot and Sasquatch. And, yeah, it was fun.
No,
who's
that's
laughing?
Terrible.
Goddamn motherfucker. You had a teacher in grammar school.
I had several teachers.
Okay, shut up. Who was instrumental in your desire to become an actor?
I appreciate this. You're close.
No, but you fucking,
Anastasia
is such a
fucking
liar.
She does way more research than most people do, so she should get credit for that.
Yes, thank you.
The thing is that my real like Mr. Holland kind of teacher was in high school. My high school drama teacher. But in grammar school, I had a music teacher that introduced me to music, and no, that was the first thing that happened. What's the matter?
She's right. Yeah. So were you popular? Like, what was school like? Were you just, because, a lot of people don't know, BD has a very fierce sense of humor, and he's mean.
I'm mean.
So,
and why? We get to the bottom of why now.
Yeah, so, I mean, you have a very cutting, edgy, where did that come from?
I think comes from the same part of me that wants to be an actor that likes to have a reaction from someone. Reaction. And so I think that's what it is. Like, it's the fun part for me is just watching a person after you've said something terrible to them.
Right.
And just watching
them. Did you ever get in trouble in school?
No, but I had a couple of situations where people would cry or something. And then the reaction that I wanted. And then I was devastated because I did not want to hurt
people. Did you apologize?
Yes.
So, give me an example.
Suzanne Grodner.
Jewish?
I think so.
Yes. Jewish. Yeah. Grodner's Jewish name. Yeah.
From Burlingame. And she, that was in, that was actually right out of high school. That was in college.
Okay.
And she was like, you know, my Anastasia. She was like somebody that I would just be really mean to. And I was much more, I was much freer about it then and much less sensitive about it. I mean,
right,
even
but
less
you,
sensitive.
Did you like her?
I loved her.
Right.
She was she's a really super talented actor. We were in shows together. She was Minnie Faye when I was in Hello Dolly and I was Barnaby. And I was just like, always like, I think I just hit her too hard. And I finally she was like, she couldn't take it. And then I was totally caught off guard because as a kid, this is kind of why I kind of like am into like telling kids things, like spelling things out for them that they'll find out eventually, but you could spell it out for them. It would be easier. Like, this is going to happen to you. Try not to like go so far that happens. Like,
so do you feel?
Because my son does it now too. My son is very, very snarky with me in particular.
Really?
Yeah. He loves to just like bust my balls about
good
everything.
Good for him.
Yeah.
But Jackson.
I'm saying like, I hope you don't do that the same way to everybody because Jackson. I will say that this happens every once in a while.
Right. So do you think it was a coping mechanism, the snarky little
I think it, BB? No, first of all, it grew. I wasn't like that as a child.
Okay.
I was
because I've met your mother, Roberta, who's the sweetest human being. She's like an angel.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah. And you are nothing like her.
I'm like her, like inside in some ways.
Right,
but I'm
right,
not
right.
like her. I'm sorry, it's really hot up here.
I know.
There are things about me that are like her. Of course, we're all like our parents in different ways.
Right.
But no, she's not mean to people.
What was your father like?
My father was impish.
Really?
My father was a little Chinese-American guy who was really cried all the time.
No way.
Yeah, he was always very sentimental, and he loved to talk about why people should always get along but I'd like to teach the world to sing. You know that song?
Yeah. I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony.
Yeah. Anyway.
I'm a little man there. Well, that's the Coke's commercial.
It was a Coke commercial.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that was a big thing in the 70s.
It
go ahead.
Was, yeah.
Where's your husband? Okay, go ahead. All right, whatever.
Oh, he was at the DMV.
All right, yeah.
Which is terrible.
Okay, go ahead. So
I don't know where it came from. I was very brainy and precocious as a child.
And you were a great student.
And I spoke in like perfect English all the time. And
can you speak Chinese?
No, I can't. We moved. This is why we moved. I mean, this is one of the side effects of us moving to the avenues was that we weren't near Chinatown anymore. I was.
Do your parents speak Chinese? Or?
Yes, and my older brother does.
Oh, of course he does.
Yeah.
How do you say coronavirus in Chinese?
I don't know.
Okay, so you didn't like that?
If I liked it, you would have known.
See how mean he is to me? Do you see? This is the evil side of BD.
It's not evil.
Okay, so, all right, so do you have a lot of friends? Like, is going to school fun? Dreaded it every goddamn morning.
No, I didn't. I was, until fifth or sixth grade, I was super good in elementary school. I was like, kind of like, I think I was like gifted, which is really, really dumb.
Right.
Dumb label. But I was given a gifted label, and then I got taken out of class to go play games and
you
know, make puzzles.
We're
going
to observe Bradley. Yeah. We're going to observe him because he's so smart.
And then homework started getting, there just started being more homework, and I wasn't interested in doing homework. So I kind of
You wanted
like,
to perform.
I did. I was singing, and I didn't know I did, but I liked doing creative things.
And did your parents?
I like to make things. I made things all the time.
Like art?
Like my mom taught me how to knit and
I love Roberta.
And she taught me, she was all into like 70s crafts. So we were always doing these weird crafts.
So you bonded more with your mother than your father, you think?
My dad took me to the ballet and my dad was a kind of a softie, you know? My dad My dad was a kind of a softie and so.
Do you think you resented it? Do you think you resented that about him? That he was such a softie?
No, I didn't.
Oh, all right.
I loved it. I loved the ballet, and I loved that he took me to the ballet.
Do you think he was kind of gay a little bit?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
My father was like that, too.
I think it's a valid question for any of us. Because, you know, you think about whatever. No.
Yeah, my father loved the theater. And he loved opera. And Elisa is always like, I think he was gay. I'm like, you never met him and he wasn't gay.
I love it.
Hey, everybody. If you know me, you know I love my liquid IV. And I love giving it to people and telling people about it. And it's part of my everyday life. I keep hydrated with liquid IV. I put it in my water bottle. Well, I have this one water bottle that I use only for liquid IV. And I put lots of ice in it and cold water because I like it very cold. And it keeps me hydrated and it's delicious. So thank you, Liquid IV. And I have to tell you, I've now given it to my son's girlfriend because, you know, they go out partying. You know what I'm talking about. And it has helped her immensely with her dehydration. That it's great for those nights where you know you're going to be having a few drinks. It's delicious. It comes in pear, white peach, grape, lemon lime. Also, there's a lemon ginger one that is great that has a little caffeine. I just love Liquid IV. And you need to keep hydrated. It's very important. It affects you on so many levels. So do yourself a favor. Keep hydrated in the best way possible. Some people hydrate to live. Some people live to hydrate. I think I live to hydrate. Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. It has 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And this is true. They have a sugar-free stick. They have Liquid IV sugar-free that Elisa, my lover, loves. I don't use the sugar-free. Whatever. But it's also been great for my traveling because I get very dehydrated on my airplane flights. So please, you've heard me say this multiple times. Go get your Liquid IV. You have to keep hydrated. It's very important. So however you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at liquidiv.com. You're welcome.
So you were like, were you the most talented kid in your high school class?
Well, no.
You know how there were like so many people in the musicals that were like, I'm gonna love you. And everyone's like, oh my God, she's so talented, you know? But there are rarely like really talented people in the musicals that are fucking Tony winners.
You're high school, I was Harold Hill.
You were?
Yeah.
Wow.
And Finch in the music, in How to Succeed.
Okay.
I mean, but I wasn't like that. I was super enthusiastic and very single track minded about it. And my teacher was really into that and wanting me to do it and go for it.
And you got good grades?
No, I didn't get good grades.
You did at the beginning.
I got in when in elementary. You're right. Jumping around like crazy. In elementary school, Oprah. In elementary school, I was in, you know, one thing, which was really precocious and brainy. And then as soon as I got out of elementary school, I started not being barely less interested in school because I was interested in these other things.
So you're in the musical theater, and do you know you're gay, correct?
Yeah. San Francisco, 1975.
How is it? Okay, so I know I'm gay, but I'm in the fucking suburbs of New Jersey. Yeah. And you can't be gay. So what is it knowing you're gay and growing up in a gay Mecca and having it all around you? I can't even fucking imagine.
It's amazing. I mean, I didn't know it was amazing when it was happening. I was afraid of it.
Right.
I thought, what is happening? I didn't understand. You know, and I didn't know that any other place in the world was different.
Right.
I didn't know that it was different in other places. So I heard maybe people talk about that comparison up to different places, but I was just in it, so I didn't know.
And you would
but
see I could guys tell that, mm-hmm. walking down the street with their, like when you were in high school, people were affectionate?
Yeah, yeah. But there was always that, the thing that they always, they still do now. You know how, like, there's the gay pride parade and then they put the freakiest person on the news?
Yes, yes, yes.
So there was always that, like, pushing in forward the person in chaps and stuff right. like that on the street. And like, right. ooh, that's so provocative and stuff. And the normalcy of it was very, you had to look, you had to be absorbed in it and go out in the world and, you know, to understand what it was, to appreciate it.
Now, did your parents know you were gay?
No.
They had no
but
idea.
But I also was, you know, it was an evolution of understanding for yourself.
Right,
what
of
it is.
Course,
like you put
yeah.
it up, you push it aside and you think it's a thing that you can get rid of or
right.
any number of things. But I was super interested in sex. I was super interested in, like, reading about sex when I was, like, 9 years old. My mom was really, like, forthcoming about, like, telling me about the birds and the bees and stuff like that and everything. And then I went to the library and I was reading all about sex from a really early age. So I kind of was looking for it, or I don't know what
right.
it was, but I was, like, really into it. And then I was aware that San Francisco was, like, a place where this was happening.
That's so interesting that your mother was so open like that.
Yeah, it is. I don't think of her that way now, actually.
But my, like, mother was not Judith. So what happens is the penis gets hard.
Well,
and
she did do it.
No, she didn't.
Oh, she didn't.
No, I thought you had a baby, like you took a shit and the baby came out. I swear to God, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
No one told me a fucking thing. Apparently, my father told my brother and said to him,
"Oh my God,
this is how you do it."
I don't know much about your brother.
Oh,
you don't.
My brother.
You haven't said that much about your brother.
He's a CPA actuary, lives in Arizona, his wife's a dentist, Jew. Anyway, apparently, my sister told me that my father said, "You can do it before you get married," to him, and said to my sister, "You can't do it before you get married."
Okay. Well.
I know. This is folklore. Gold family folklore. So that's great that you, and so you
were. She wouldn't have told me if I didn't ask her. I was, like, super, like, inquisitive. And I'm sure it made her uncomfortable.
Do you think you miss that, oh my God, I'm gay. How am I going to live my life? Like this, I mean, I remember thinking, oh my God, I have to be in the closet for my whole fucking life. I'm never gonna, you know, find love. You know, do you feel like, and the self-hatred and the shame and the, do you think you missed that boat because of San Francisco?
No, I had my own version of it. It was really, you know, it's such an uncomfortable feeling.
Yeah.
I was set up for success, I guess,
right.
because I lived there. But I felt the same kind of, that gnawing feeling of not being normal.
Right.
And not knowing who you're supposed to tell or not tell and
right.
all of that stuff. And then feeling secret and secretive and hiding things or whatever from your parents. I had this stash of Playgirl magazines.
Really?
And that my mom found under the bed.
No way!
Yeah. And then I had to pretend I forgot what I did is I somehow... My older brother tried to, like, bail me out or something and pretend like they were his or something, and because he knew it was, like, I was just so scared.
What was he gonna say? I want to be a doctor. I'm just studying anatomy.
Well, no, I mean, just like, oh, he had all. Well, because he had a whole subscription to Playboy.
Right.
So he was like, you know, whatever, and he didn't. I don't remember. It was really traumatic.
Well, how old were you?
I was probably 13 or something like that.
And what'd she say? I found
there
these.
There was not much said. As I recall.
How do you know
this
she
is all
found
like
him?
Now that this is becoming therapy now. Because
no.
I never talk about this. How did she know?
Yeah. I mean, how do you know she knew? Like, did she say something?
I think she probably like a lot of parents that knew about me. I was, like, knitting and stuff.
Right.
You know. Right?
And in
musical theater.
Right.
And so but for my mom has selective, like a lot of moms, I think, she had selective comprehension about
right.
certain things. Like, I was with Richie for many years, and they thought we were, like, friends or something.
Oh, please. My mother used to go.
You know, like, we would sleep in the go to the room, we'd close the door,
right.
come out, they, you know, when they come to New York and stay with us. And then they were like, oh, you know, kind of surprised.
Right.
When came
my
out.
Mother would come to the apartment. We had Sharon and I had one bedroom that had a day bed.
Yep.
And a desk. And there was always laundry on the day bed. And then there was another, this is before cell phones, kids. And there was the one room with a queen size bed and alarm clocks on each side. See, now people can be in the closet better because there's no alarm clock. So there was an alarm clock on each side. And my mother would come over and walk in the bedroom with the queen size bed and say, I don't want to kick Sharon out of her room. I'm like, you're not kicking her out of her room. There's no clock. Hello. You know, and... Yeah.
But so, I guess, you know, really, to analyze it, unless you spell something out, why would somebody, go there for you?
Please.
Well, I mean,
everyone called me Robert when I was a kid.
Who did?
Me. I said, I went through a phase where I had to be called Robert or Ringo. I swear to God.
You wanted to be called?
Yeah, Robert Ringo.
The name you picked was Robert.
And then Ringo too. And then my cousin Helene still calls
Ringo,
me
Ringo. I can understand.
Robert. She calls call me Robert. She still calls, and I cut my hair off and
Really?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that because, do you ever? No, really. Because I think about this all the time. Sometimes I wore my mom's dresses and stuff.
I used to go home and put on my father's clothes and ties.
So then you start thinking at some point, or you look back and you go, well, what is that fluidity within me, and how is there a level that it stops at or something like that? You know,
and that process of I'm not trans.
Yeah. You don't identify as trans, but then clearly there's some kind of.
But there was something where I had to go home and put on new men's clothes.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Bob.
But I knew that was a fucking bad thing to tell you. Yeah. As it was coming out of my mouth, I was like, fuck. So, all right. So you graduate high school and you go to San Francisco State University?
Yeah, briefly. For 20 minutes.
For 20 minutes. And then you decide you're going to move to New York.
Yeah. It was a terrible program for me.
The SFSU.
Well, okay. I had this incredible teacher in high school. And then I went to...
What was the teacher's name?
Zora Chanis. Yeah. Philadelphia Jew.
Oh, I love you, Zora. Is she gone? Bye, Zora. Thank you. And you move to New York, and are your parents like, you can't move to New York?
No. She helped me get them to get behind.
Zora did?
Yeah. She was all about the whole thing. She was about convincing me, and then she was about convincing them.
So, and then you start working in dinner theater.
I did work in some dinner theaters, yeah.
Okay, what was that like?
Well, it was free food.
And you know and at this point you're gay. You're in New York, so you're even freer to be gay.
Yes, that's true.
But it is the middle of the AIDS crisis, correct? Or
no,
the beginning?
It's right pre.
Right.
When I moved there, it was right before. So there was a free period between in the first half of the 80s.
Right.
Yeah. So I came to New York in the early 80s.
Right. And that's when it was just, we found a disease. That's when it was coronavirus.
There was a few years of where there was nothing. Like 81, 82, 83.
Yeah.
And then 83, 84.
It started. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a young gay guy. You moved to New York. I know what that was like because I lived in New York.
Yeah.
As a lesbo with gay male friends, you know, and, you know, going to these parties and thinking, oh, that one doesn't look so good. Or I wonder if
that party, that person,
the person at the party.
OK.
You know,
thinking what they're not. They're,
yeah.
They,
are they
you can't
are
make
they,
a connection to them?
No, I'm saying they look sick, you know.
Oh,
yes.
Thanks. Okay, I didn't know we
were
on that subject.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to be very
I thought you were
clear.
Talking about being a young gay person being social. Okay.
No,
so you're
I'm
talking
saying
about,
you're,
you started to be reach.
You're coming.
Reach,
you're,
that's the mid to late 80s.
So what was it like?
To me, that's a dawning that occurred in the late 80s where you realized the gravity of the situation.
Right.
We were constantly going to memorial services.
Oh,
And in the business of in show business, there was just this incredible frequency.
Right.
To this, oh my goodness, this is happening. In a very, it's actually really, you're bringing this up on purpose because of coronavirus, right? Because it's,
no,
it's,
because I mean,
it is a very relative kind of like, they think, there was a time when we thought, oh, well, let's can't be that big a deal. And then it became a big deal. And then it became life-changing, life-threatening big deal. And it really informed everyone of our generation.
Right.
It informs our behavior and our choices and our thoughts. You know, there are lots of gay men that are still really today very conflicted about condoms and things like that, you know, conflicted about what we perceive to be unsafe sex and what that means. And even though there are kinds of sex you can have now that are different from the way that it was when we were in the middle of the crisis, people are still conditioned. They're still trained.
But don't you think young gay boys are, oh, I don't need to do that, or it's not a terminal illness anymore, or, you know, I just feel like...
I think they do. I think some of them are.
And I don't know what that... part.
It is, but if their reality is different from my reality, it's very different.
Yeah, it sucked.
Yeah.
So you work in dinner theater, and then you go... I know. All right, this is how my brain works, you fucking assholes. AIDS, dinner theater. Okay. You then... go to L.A. to take acting classes.
Okay, yeah. I mean, you're getting the short version, but yes. What happened was I was doing the dinner theater thing, and I was doing a production of Joseph at... we're waiting.
He was Jewish, right, Joseph?
Joseph was Jewish. She doesn't know the music from
Techno. Oh.
Do one song. One song.
No.
No, name a song.
Joseph. Joseph. Yeah.
Okay, forget it.
Joseph. Okay. Anyway.
Fine.
Oh, failure.
Okay.
We have the same birthday.
Yeah, they have the same birthday. And they're both mean to me. Okay.
It's a mean sign. It's a mean birthday.
It is?
You know who's on my birthday?
Who?
F. Murray Abraham.
Can you refer to it now as our birthday?
Yes, our birthday, yeah.
F. Murray.
F. Murray. But you're a Scorpio.
Uh-huh.
So am I.
Okay, so?
So I'm not mean. Shut the fuck up! You know I'm not really mean inside, you fucking assholes. Fuck you. Okay.
Okay, so I was in it. I was in Joseph, and then I got the L.A. company, the L.A. company of Lacage. And so I went to L.A. And so then when I was in L.A., I started studying with this guy, Donald Houghton.
What's his name?
Donald Houghton.
Jewish? Is he Jewish?
Not famous. I think that's a borderline, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
How'd you find him? I never even heard of him.
He's not famous. I just said he's not famous.
Okay, whatever. But, you know, I took acting classes. I'm not fighting.
You did?
Shut up!
Hey everyone, I have a new sponsor and I love them. They're called OneSkin. OneSkin. And what is OneSkin? It is skincare. Skincare that is simple. I guess that's the perfect word. It's simple. It you don't have to put on 18,000 products while you're like dying to get in bed. OneSkin was founded by 4 PhDs dedicated to skin longevity. And this stuff proves you don't need a complicated routine to achieve better skin. Their supplements, they're topical, and they make it easy to help your skin stay younger and healthier without putting all that other shit, I said shit, on your face. And the secret of OneSkin is their OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent, did you like that? Senescent cells, those little cells that contribute to skin aging. And the fewer amount of cells that they're called zombie cells, that means healthier, younger looking skin, fewer wrinkles, fewer lines, reduced age spots, natural barrier. And that is very important, especially now it's spring and summer and you're going to be out in the sun. So, you know, you love your skin, so do something for it. Return it the favor of having skin and treat it nicely. Does that make sense? Well, so I'm very excited about OneSkin and I haven't gotten my product yet, but I am really, really, really looking forward. So I'm going to be giving you an update on my skin, but you should do it with me. For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15 15% off their first OneSkin purchase using the code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, when you check out at oneskin.co. That's oneskin.co. And it's oneskin.co. You really, really need to invest in your skin. It's very important. So OneSkin, you're going to do this today. You're going to go to oneskin.co. It is more than skincare. It's about skin longevity, targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your best at every age. Get started today with 15% off using code JUDYGOLD at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code JUDYGOLD. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin. You're welcome.
You get M. Butterfly. How?
I was doing like these bit parts in TV shows.
Like what? Tell me.
Like Simon and Simon. And
those are Jewish names, yeah.
Yeah. And those kinds of networky shows. Like, I played the Photomat boy and Simon and Simon.
Oh, remember Photomat?
Yeah.
What did you feel like, oh my God, I'm like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was deeply afraid of having to work in stereotypical parts. And every time I got something that I could do without speaking an accent,
right,
or in going into that territory, made me feel successful. And I did a few of them, so I felt successful.
Did your agent, did you make that disclaimer when you went to your agent, look, I don't want to...
I was with an Asian agent. With only Asian clients.
Oh.
Who was that?
The founder of the agency was named Bessie Liu, uh-huh, and she passed the agency on to this guy named Guy Lee was his name, and he was the uncle of all Asian actors, that, and he handled most of them.
Wow.
It was a big deal if you left him,
Right, because you're disloyal.
Yeah. And that meant you were going to like a regular firm or like a white, agency or something like that.
Right.
And he was really quite wonderful. But limited, but wonderful.
Right.
But he didn't have to be explained that stuff. Although, in order to make a living, he had to kind of sell us down the river a little bit.
Right. How long were you with him?
Several years.
Okay. Were you with, so you were with him when you got M. Butterfly?
I was, yeah.
And so you, were you shocked? Like, how did you audition? Yeah. How did you get,
Guy had said, there's this play, and would you like to audition for a play? And I said no, because I was doing the Photomat boy thing.
Right.
I was playing either a Photomat boy, or like I was a Chinatown teenage gang member.
Right.
Or I was a waiter in a Chinese restaurant or something like that. And I was doing a lot of that. I was like making a living. I said, well, no, I'll stay here and I'm okay. And then, but then I had always really been trained and geared for being on stage, and I loved the stage, and I had always wanted to be in a Broadway play or whatever.
Right.
So what is this thing? To tell me what it is. And so he didn't have a lot of information. He got me the script, and the script was a play written by an Asian playwright, and I never had experienced that before.
Right.
Simultaneously, I was studying with Donald about this whole concept of being a messenger. Like, his whole philosophy was, if you adhere to this idea that you're a messenger, then you don't make selfish choices for yourself as an actor. You don't like choose to speak in some fancy accent that isn't appropriate, but you can tell from the script what it's supposed to be, and you should stick to it, and you should pretend like you were the person who wrote it so that you can kind of convey what it is that they're trying to convey.
Right.
And I was okay with that in concept, but this finally made me understand, as I read this play, which had an Asian American man's point of view, what that could be like. Like, oh, I can sell this story. This I get.
Because you had no representation as a kid growing up on television.
I had no representation, yeah.
Zero.
Yeah, I didn't. And that was part of the whole trepidation about going into it in the first place. And it made me feel like I was doing a foolish thing.
Right.
And it made me feel like... I was doomed, really. So any glimmer of hope that you got, you ran with it.
Right. So you had to audition in New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you fly back from L.A.
I fly to LA. I was doing this little musical called Mail at in LA.
M-A-L-E or M-A?
M-A-I-L, with Michael Rupert.
Okay.
And a bunch of famous people actually were in it.
Who?
Stokes Mitchell was in it.
No. Brian.
I'm losing my mind now. I can't remember.
Okay, go ahead.
But Robert Mandan from Soap.
Oh yeah.
Possibly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good Robert. I love that name, Robert.
Yeah. Remember Soap?
Yes, I love Soap.
Love Soap.
That was first gay. The first gays. Yeah.
Billy Crystal.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I was in this the musical. I was I had a little part, and then I had to rush to arrange it so that I could come back and be in the do the show that night. And I went to have this audition. Anyway, I auditioned in this. Strange, it was on Theater Row, where it is now, where all those theaters are.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but they were all shitty little like storefronts at that time.
On 42nd.
On 42nd
Street. Across the street from West Bank.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was the Doug Fairbanks or the whatever, but they had little, they were not good then.
Right.
And they were really cold and drafty, and they were really old. And I had this audition, and then I was called back for that afternoon. I was told to go have breakfast with the director, and I was very green about it. I didn't understand what was happening.
Isn't that the best? You don't know because you don't give it any pat. You're like, oh, this
I kind of. I don't miss it, but I kind of.
Yeah.
I thought I was really. I was very naive about the whole thing.
Right.
I had a friend, Ray, who was a friend of mine from L.A. that said, "I'm going to come to New York with you," and he kind of flew with me. You know, he on his own.
Ray.
Cochran. Was his name.
So cock, were you touching his cock as well?
No.
All right, go ahead.
But I wonder what happened
Shut
to him,
up.
Though.
What?
I'm going to have to look him up.
Yeah, see?
What Ray Cochran's doing. Anyway, Ray said, "I'm going to come with you." And then after the audition, he said, "Well, how did it go?" And I said, "It wasn't very good because I didn't feel like I had done what I wanted to do."
You just walk in and they're all sitting behind the table like...
Yeah. Okay. It's not that many. It was actually the director, the woman who was the composer, a few other people, casting directors and stuff like that. Anyway, I didn't feel like it went well, and I had worked my ass off with Donald to try to do really well. But then Ray said, "Well, what happened?" And I said, "It was not good." And I was really disappointed, and I felt really down. And I was really let down because the whole buildup of getting on a plane is, like, did you ever, like, test for a pilot?
Oh, yeah.
You go out, it's terrible.
And you're like, oh, my God, they really want me.
Yeah. And then it's over, and then before you know it, it's like jumping off a cliff or something like that. So I was very disappointed. It was over. And then I said, and he said he wanted me to come to the hotel and meet him for breakfast. And so then Ray was like, that's like a thing. And I said, oh, really? That would happen? Like, I thought it was just like a courtesy that you came to town.
Oh, yeah, because people are so courteous in this business.
And it wasn't. It was like he was really interested in me. And so
did you work on like being a woman, like with your acting teacher?
Yeah, sure. Well, I had an instinct for it. I had just done, I had a year or so before, I had minimal drag experience in Lepage. And I had a sensibility. I used to wear my mom's dresses and stuff like that. So I had this sense of me, of that side of me that I never accessed before as a performer.
But your body, like the way you moved your body in that show. I mean, you were a woman. So is that when you decided it was not going to be Bradley anymore? It was going to be BD? Because I know you did that so no one would know your gender.
No, the Stuart Ostro was the producer. And Stuart Ostro asked. God, this is...
And you know it was like Ostrowitz Bergstein before that. Yeah, go ahead.
At Ellis Island.
Yeah.
Yeah. He asked me if we could somehow disguise my name.
Oh.
And I said, oh, okay, I'd be fine with that. And my dad's nickname was BD when he was young. And so I was happy doing that because it was my dad's nickname. And then it never got... I was going to put it back afterwards.
Right.
I was going to change it back because I thought, well, I'll just go back to it after the show's over. But then it took off. Yeah.
So you have no idea how big this show is going to be. But you're with John Lithgow.
In fact, it was very dicey and it almost didn't come in.
Right. And
I was with John Lithgow, who was a big star at that time.
Right. And opening night, do your parents come?
Well, first of all, we tried out in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Now, not to belabor the whole story, but it was interesting because the show almost tanked.
Right.
Like, they lost $1 million. Somebody pulled out in the middle of it. They weren't sure if it was working. And I felt this really strong sense of pressure, because right. I thought, if it doesn't work, it's because of me.
And how old are you? You're like 27. Okay.
And then I remember one thing that happened was that Guy told me as we were getting ready for rehearsal that they want to put a clause in your contract that you'll agree to a nude scene. And I was really like very alarmed by this. This is way before like right. alarming like Me Too or anything. We didn't right. know anything about harassment or anything. And I was very like put on guard. And then I said, I don't think I want to do that. What is that about? They said, well, actually David's rewritten the play and he's written the final scene with the nude scene in it. I said, oh, okay. So send me the scene. And I read the scene and said, right. oh, okay, this makes sense. I will do this. And to make a long story short, the director, John Dexter, who was notoriously mean, like really mean,
right.
mean, not like my kind of mean, promised me we'll stage the scene so that you're really comfortable and everyone will leave the room and then we'll do it towards in tech or whatever
right.
so that you can feel comfortable about how you're going to position your body, because you're not standing there like fully
right.
frontal nudity. It's all kind of staged properly. Maybe, you know, it's not like you're going to hide anything, but you're not going to
cover up and it
has to look exactly
yeah.
right. And so I thought it was really great. And we were doing the first preview of the show in the middle of the show when that scene came, I thought, we didn't do that. We never did it. I was always just thinking how I would do it and
right.
doing it the way I thought I would do it. And I never really dropped trow until that performance.
Wow, in front of the audience.
Yeah, I don't know how we got through the whole tech without it, because it was like tech, oh yeah, you know, it's just tech, don't
yeah.
really do it. And so never really did it. And then we were there in a matinee with a bunch of like 600 old white hair ladies.
Jews, no doubt.
Yes.
Bridge Club, DC. Mahjong. I'm sure my mother was there.
And
yeah.
The moment came, and I had these purple silk boxer shorts with pennies weighted in them, and I opened the snaps of the fly, and I dropped, I let go, and they just fell down, and there was a big drum, like a big musical cue
right.
that stuff, and the show completely stopped for like 5 minutes, where people screaming,
like screaming, like what?
Like a baseball game, like a someone hit a grand slam or something.
Oh, like white, like
it was like they just were, they couldn't. I'm actually not sure why any individual person was screaming. I just heard screaming. I can't tell you why, right? I can tell
because
it was like a baseball game.
They thought you were a woman the whole
yeah,
time.
It is kind of
right.
Why, yeah. Well, also women.
We know it's
women,
not because it was huge.
No, I mean women.
I'm kidding. Shut up. You're not. No one's on my side tonight. No, I'm kidding. Like, no, I'm sure it's because they were like, oh my, because we're so fucking great.
Yeah, but also they were looking at my ass, and that makes them scream. You know, they see an ass all
right.
of a sudden where there was not before.
Did John Lithgow?
He's upstage and I'm downstage and my back is to the audience and he's up on this thing and we're just looking at each other for 5 minutes, like just going like this. And he has to act. I don't have to act.
Right.
They can't see my face.
So he can't start until they stop screaming.
Yeah, then he goes on with the play. And so that is the moment, actually, after an investor pulling out and all of this stuff. That is the moment when they knew the play would work. And that we
this
were coming
in.
This
is the moment.
Anastasia was in it, Jekyll and Hyde.
Wow. That's fascinating. First preview. Did you notice anything different from John?
What do you
like,
mean?
Like, because he had. Well,
oh, it was electric. Like it
right.
was like the scene. Then from that went on. The big meaty scene is after that moment.
Right.
And then that whole scene played like amazingly. And then it was, we knew that there was something to the whole concept of it.
Okay.
And it was a great relief.
Now.
Then we came to New York, and then
right.
there was an opening. Yeah.
Okay. How was that?
It was incredible because my mom and dad and, you know, we rode the we rode horses in Central Park, and, you know, like we went the carriage thing and all that. And then I put them in a room in the plaza, which was still a plaza hotel.
Oh my God, you're such a good son.
Well, we just went the whole. We did the whole.
What about Brian and Barry? Did they come?
Brian and Barry. Brian couldn't come. Barry and Doris came. And that was, it was wonderful.
So you won the most awards, theater awards, for that part that anyone has ever won for a Broadway role.
I suppose if I put it in my bio, then I'm bragging about it. And then when you'd say it like that, I have to accept it.
Yes,
that
is what I would say. Accept it. No one has won that many awards for a role since. I mean, that is fucking unbelievable. So you're at the Tonys. Okay. All right. First of all, the earring that you were wearing, I wanted to kill you. You wore an earring.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, if I wore an earring, he would totally fucking make fun of me. You wore an earring. You had brown glasses. I watched this whole thing the other night. Okay. Did you have any idea that you were going to win?
No. You know, like I was pushing it away. I was pushing all like signs and signals away from me. And I would like go on these long walks by myself and try to like reset my expectations.
So, but when you found out you were nominated?
I got myself into trouble because when I got the part, when I auditioned for the part, I told Ray, I said, whoever gets this part is going to get a Tony Award. I said, there's no question about it.
Right.
It's like such a fucking great part. And then I got the part and I was like, oh fuck, I should never have said that. And then I desperately did not want to be disappointed. And I to this day, I am the same way about expectations about opening nights or reviews, or I don't read reviews and stuff like that.
I
feel that it's so separate from the actual work that you're doing.
Right.
So it tends to fuck things up.
Right. But if I've read a review, I've learned my lesson. Then every time I get to the point,
part they talk about,
all you do is think about that.
Yeah.
So you're sitting there and they say B.D. Wong and you're 27 years old.
Yeah, which seems old to me now when I think about 21-year-old people and stuff like that.
Oh
right?
My God! What?
But I was.
What, like, did your heart? Because you ran up to the stage.
My date was Brian, my brother.
Oh.
Who couldn't come to opening night?
Okay.
So this was the payback for that.
Okay.
And he was a leveler. He was really there because I was saying, we're going to have a good time. We're not going to talk about it that much. It's not that big a deal if I don't win. It should actually be the expectation that we don't win, right? Okay, all right, okay, fine. Are you good with that? And he was like, yes, absolutely. And then I see him every once in a while, like, apparently, like, praying or, like, I'm thinking, oh, you're ruining this. So, but anyway, they call. I don't remember.
Did
I just remember running and going, I don't want to, I just.
But you didn't pull out a piece of paper or anything.
No, and I went on for like what feels like 20 minutes.
No, it was short.
I remember it being interminable.
Thank you all so much for listening to part one of Kill Me Now with my friend, B.D. Wong. God, that was fun. Make sure to tune in next week for part two, even more fun. If you like the show, make sure to subscribe and leave a review. It helps more people find this amazing show, and the reviews should be 5 stars only. That's it. That's the only review. That's it. Listen to the following dates to see if I'll be coming to a town near you. On March 18th, God willing, I'll be at Homo Comicus, which is at Gotham Comedy Club in New York City. On April 24th and 23rd, that's the 23rd, 24th in New York City at Joe's Pub, Varla Jean Merman and I will be performing the Judy and Varla show. It's so fucking fun. It's going to sell out, so get your tickets. Join me on April 30th, well, if you're a Jew, at the North Country Reform Temple, Shabbat Shalom, in Glen Cove, New York. Lastly, I'm excited to announce I'll be part of Netflix's Stand Out, a comedy festival. I'll be performing on May 1st at the Greek Theater in Los Angeles. You can get tickets for all of these events at judygold.com. That's JUDYGOLD.com. And a lot of exciting dates will be announced in the very soon. So stay up to date on all new dates. Make sure to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at
Judy Gold, that's J-E-W-D-Y-G-O-L-D, you know, like Jew Gold. I'm pretty funny. So thank you all so much for listening. You're the best. And as we always say, so long!
Don't forget to tune in next week to Just Kill Me Now.
Just Kill Me.
Oh. Don't forget to turn... for part two on Just Kill Me...
No, it's not. It's
Just Kill Me.
No.
Judy Gold's Just Kill Me.
Kill Me Now.
Just Kill Me Now.